do it right. So, today I'm going to talk about home leaving, Buddhist style. So that's the topic. There was a priest in Japan, his name is Kodo Sawaki. He was a Soto priest, and he considered himself kind of homeless. He followed the Soto tradition, I guess, but he didn't really have a temple, and he was kind of an avant-garde, a little bit out of step with the whatever institution there might have been. He really went out to the kind of to the fields of Japan, and so it was very well known. So I've been reading this book by him, and he's called himself Homeless Kodo. And each of the chapters, it has a certain focus, and yet each chapter kind of leads from one to another. So one of the first chapters, I think it's about the third chapter, and this first line really struck me, and he says, "The problem is, even though you were born human, you haven't found your true self, the way you really wish to live." And I just thought that was lovely, partly because it takes, we cannot help. We are born human, and there's nothing wrong with that. It isn't like we need to aspire to be something better and more divine. We are human, and I think part of leaving home is beginning to accept that we are human, and that we have needs that are different than maybe what's being offered to us at one particular time, or there's something internally going on. And that's the growth that happens with humanity and with the human individual, singularly. In the Buddhist tradition, there's the Theravada, which is kind of the Tibetan Buddhism, and they were very focused on themselves, and no judgment. That's just where the time brought them. And then out of that, and their own kind of salvation, then out of that, the Mahayana, which Zen, Rinzai Zen, Soto Zen, is part of the Mahayana tradition. And that developed as people began to kind of think more outside themselves, thinking about humanity, about the planet, about our environment, about the consequence that we have by living, by being human. And so the Mahayana tradition is much more inclusive of all things. And I was thinking the other night, it would be interesting maybe in 2,000 more centuries, what will have evolved out of Mahayana? Because there is no it, there is no permanent state to get to. So that was kind of an intriguing question. What might we further evolve into? We don't have any idea. We can't imagine, right? So, and then he says, you haven't found your true self. And, again, in different religions, they strive to become better people, more compassionate, more loving, more ethical, whatever the focus might be. Whatever our true self is, I think it has to match our humanity. It isn't like we're going to find our true self and that's going to be, in the Christian tradition, God or Allah. It isn't that we're going to transform into something else, but we're going to kind of uncover that and find it. It's already there, but we just don't see it. And then the last line, he says, the way you really wish to live. And to me, that was very hopeful because it feels like it gives me a sense of choice of what kind of a person do I want to be? As I'm walking out the door in the morning, I'm becoming more aware to turn the light off before I leave the house. My mother certainly told me, turn the lights off, and it was like save money, save electricity, but but it's beginning to have a different meaning, you know. So it's like, okay, this is how I want to live, just by walking over and turning lights off. Sometimes I get lazy and don't turn the lights off, or I forget and I don't turn the lights off. So I think that the way we really wish to live in it isn't like this is who I'm going to become, but that the joining of, I'm going to call it, the divine and the human, really calls for us and calls us to be more. Tom Hand at Mercy Center used to say, "You are more. You know, you're more than." But that doesn't bring in a sense of achievement. You know, I got it in goal, but it's just recognition. The flower blooming is more tomorrow than it is today. So then Kodo Sawaki, on his a couple of chapters down the road, he says, a home leaver should be a person who creates a unique way of life. And again, there is a sense of choice in that word, you know, of who creates it, that is actively involved with whatever is going on. So the candle, when I was looking at it this morning, you know, sometimes it's very still, you know, depending on the wind and the wind, I guess. And then other times it was just, you know, wiggling and, you know. So we are impacted by things around us. We can't change that, but we can, you know, try to become who we really are. And I think that's what he means when he says, a unique way of life. It isn't, I'm gonna, this is what I was always taught, so this is what I'm gonna do. But begin to look, okay, well, does that really fit who I am, what my circumstances are, and who I really want to be? Home, you know, certainly can mean the physical home, you know, when we're 18, 20, 22, whatever, how old we are, we leave home traditionally. You know, it's kind of in steps. We start at kindergarten and go out for a few hours, and then, you know, we get up to, you know, college, and we actually move out of the house into a dorm or something like that. But home is also, it's a gift, and it can be kind of a curse psychologically, because we can say, okay, this is where I belong, and then we get stuck there. Okay, this is it, and it's going to be it forever and ever. I remember one job that I had, I was so enthralled with it in the very beginning, I thought, I'm going to retire from this job. Well, you know, 5 years later, I said, well, I guess I'm out of here. But so we begin to to feel that home, whatever the familiar, the secure is can become confining. And this is a sign of growth. This is a sign of, you know, new little tendrils taking off. And it can be kind of disconcerting because we don't know who we are or where we're going. But yet the tendrils, they go. You know, there's a story about the amaryllis that was in a closet. And I don't know if it's a true story or not, but it's a lovely image. And it was in a closet, you know, and how they come in boxes at Christmas time. And it eventually creeped out the box and under the door and bloomed on the other side of the door. So we have lots of hindrances, but sometimes they are our own hindrances. That, you know, I can't do that. You know, I'm here in my box. I've got this responsibility. I've got that responsibility. I can't. And yet, and there's a validity to that, too. But we have to be careful not to make it a... This is our security, and this is our identity in a sense. And in home leaving, sometimes, especially when we start out, we say, okay, well, I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to try this on. And so then we imitate. You know, we join a different group, and we try to imitate the rules and regulations and the traditions of that group. But eventually, that doesn't work either. You know, because we are human, and I think there's a natural movement towards growth, moving outside of the closet, and so then, you know, then we begin to give up that, whatever that was, for a period of time. You know, it can be a marriage. It can be an occupation, a career. It can be that you're no longer a parent. So what are you? There's so. Sometimes I say I love getting older, and I think I love it because I finally feel much more free to do kind of what it feels like it's a natural thing for me that I want to do. So I'm very hopeful about old age. So I think, let's not look at it as bad. So how do we find and how do we begin to experience, either the confusion or the desire or the urge or, the necessity of giving up and of moving on and receiving something else? And that's where I think Zazen comes in. For me, it comes in there. It's a place for me to begin to quiet my mind, to notice, I'm already thinking about, what are we going to have for dinner tonight, and it also has become a place that I can feel more confident in myself, that it feels more real, it feels more valid, less like I'm trying to please other people. And Reverend Ito and many other teachers will say, don't come here for you, or come to Zazen for you, or whatever your practice is. Again, I think Zazen for me is a beautiful one, but it doesn't work for everybody, and that's okay too. They have to find their way of blooming in the world. So when we do sit Zazen, then we do begin to see how we are attached to a certain way of being or a certain identity. And then we begin to understand, well, maybe I don't have to keep it that way. Maybe I can change. Maybe it's okay. And we begin to loosen things up. And it becomes more spacious then. And we have more freedom in our life. So one of my own personal agendas is about whatever I talk about. I want to bring it back to Zazen, because whatever, Buddhists practice Zazen, but artists practice Zazen. When my husband plays the bagpipes, he's practicing Zazen, especially if he really gets the notes right and gets into the flow. It's right. And chants, some traditions chant a lot. So it's a matter of finding what fits for you as that person that allows you to be the more again. So with that, there's I've not seen this before, but I saw it last night on the website, and apparently it's from the Dhammapada, which are the words of the Buddha, supposedly. And so I'm going to read it to you with the emphasis on the last three lines. So he said, "Live in joy, in love, even among those who hate. Live in joy, in health, even among the afflicted. Live in joy, in peace, even among the troubled." These are the ones I really like. I like those others too. But look within, be still, free from fear and attachment. Know the sweet joy of living in the way. Look within, be still. That's Zazen. Thank you for coming and listening and joining and contributing and just being here. A lovely day.